Buongiorno everybody, and welcome to a special episode of the Idea Element. Today we are going to talk about the release candidate of Windows Identity Foundation, which is just ready for you to download. I'm here in Red West, which is the new house of the Identity guys, with not one, but three key people in the Windows Identity Foundation product team. And we have, from the left, Sid. In the middle we have Sesha, and on the right we have Govind. Morning guys, how's it going?
Good, great.
How do you feel now that finally RC is behind you?
It's awesome.
I'm really happy, yeah.
Nice, now you can now enjoy your cappuccino without worrying too much. So, before we get into the nice list of all the many news that we have for RC, it is Idea Element tradition to get to know better our victim, our interviewee. So let's start with Sid. Sid, can you tell us a bit about your history with Microsoft?
Sure. So I started in 2001 in a small product team called WSI, standing for Web Services Enhancements. I'm sure some of you might have heard about it.
I remember that.
Yeah, and that lasted for a good 3 years, and then I was moved to the WCF security team, strangely enough, because WSI was all about security. And I've been in that team ever since, and now we're doing federated identity, which is kind of very similar to what Web Services Security was all about, and so now I'm here.
That's great. And what is exactly your role in the Windows Identity Foundation team?
So I'm a test lead. I manage the team that tests the Windows Identity Foundation. And I also overlook the WCF security parts of it. So I kind of manage both of those teams.
All right. That sounds like a very interesting job. I'm sure happy that you do it. So, and here we have Sesha. Sesha is well known to our audience since he did one video about the beta. And Sesha, just for refreshing, what's your role in Windows Identity Foundation team?
So I'm the program manager for the Windows Identity Foundation product team. Yeah, I've been with the team for about 2 years now.
That sounds pretty interesting. Yep. All right. And here we have Govind. Govind, how about you and Microsoft?
Oh yeah, okay. I started in the year 2000 in the Windows networking team. I worked on remote access servers and built UPnP and peer-to-peer for 3 years. And then I decided to jump into web services and I joined WSI. So I was in the WSI 2.0 and 3.0 phases. From there I transitioned into building WCF security. I've been doing that ever since like 2005, I guess. And now building Windows Identity Foundation, and my role is I'm a dev lead for WCF security and Windows Identity Foundation.
That's great. That sounds a very interesting job. And at this point, now that we know each other, let's dive into the technical stuff. So, can you tell me a list of the things that you believe are most representative of the news in the release candidate?
Okay. So we have released the beta 2, as you know, probably in May 2009, and there are audiences out there. We have been using the beta 2 for quite some, like for about 6-7 months now, and we have received a lot of feedback, and based on the feedback that we got from you, from the customers, we have introduced a couple of new features, as well as we have upgraded, I would say, improved some of the features that were there in beta 2. So first of all, the name of the product itself, it used to be in beta 2 called Geneva Framework. Now we have officially named it as Windows Identity Foundation. This is in alignment with our other foundation products like Windows Communication Foundation, and then also WPF, which is Windows Presentation Foundation. So we now call this one as Windows Identity Foundation. For short term, is WIF. And second of all, we have received feedback about diagnosability, the capability to be able to diagnose issues when arise when you're building an application on Geneva on WIF. So we have improved, we added a lot of tracing capabilities in this release candidate. I will actually go through in detail about what are all the tracing capabilities and how it will help you in diagnosed problems. The other major update are the controls. If you remember in beta 2, we actually had an STS control, passive STS control. And we have actually made that as an, removed that control, and instead we actually introduced an API so that object model you can actually use to build an passive STS control that gives you even more granular control over how you wanted to build an STS, a passive STS.
So just for clarifying,
sure.
The rationale for removing the control is that you want to give more control, more granular control on what people do, as opposed to what we were doing with the control.
Exactly, yes. Because with the control, the feedback we got was you couldn't do many customization around that. Like, we have to do a lot of, if I wanted to be able to enable a sign-out behavior within the STS control and stuff like that, there are a lot of things that were missing with just having control. And we figured that the right approach would be to actually provide an OM for it instead of just, you know, encapsulating everything into a single control.
Right.
Okay. The third major another update I would say is on the setup itself. As you can see, it's a Windows Identity Foundation, which means it's actually part of Windows now. It's a Windows component. And it is going to be, the setup has been updated from the MSI technology to what we call MSU technology, which means you would be able to actually get updates for this product out of Windows updates itself. So that's a big change we have made in this particular release candidate. So the idea is you will get a separate download for your MSU, and then later on for further updates, you will be able to get it through the Windows update itself. And the last major update I would say, well, in terms of controls perspective, is the FedUtil specific changes. We have introduced like, in SDK package in beta 2 the FedUtil tool that allows you to establish trust from the application to STS, Security Token Service. And with the RC candidate, the release candidate, we have introduced a support for controls-based applications as well, which means there is a federated passive sign-in control that you can plug a drag and drop to your application to enable it, federation enable the application. And then to establish a trust from that application to an STS, you can simply right-click on this control from your design view, and then which will invoke the FedUtil through which you can configure against or provision a specific STS to the relying party application. So in addition, we actually added in another feature called a task scheduler, so it will automatically run every night to be able to update your config as well. But this is more like to give you a concept, and it's probably not a full-blown feature at this point, but again, this is available in our SDK packages. Those are the kind of SDK and the control-related aspects, and I will probably ask Govind to explain more about caching and the crypto updates as well.
Oh yeah, sure. So one of the things which we did for RC is we went really deep into looking at the security model that we have. We wanted to make a lot of updates in terms of, okay, what is the defaults that we provide and how secure are these? And a few things which we observed is in our passive cases, In any passive federation scenario, you have basically a STS posting a token to a client's browser, which gets replayed back, and then we had issues with, okay, if a user just hits a back button and goes back to the previous page, what happens? Are we going to repost the token again? So then we wanted to build some kind of a replay detection around that, and we have done that in our scene. The other updates we have done is significant revamp of the code is basically we updated all our default hashing algorithms to SHA-256. As you would have heard, like SHA-1 has been pretty weak, almost close to be broken, so we decided our defaults cannot be using that, so we updated it to SHA-256. Fully understanding, there are going to be interop issues, but as a security basis, that's the right thing to do, so we updated that. The other thing we have done is also previously in our beta build, when a SAML token was validated, we weren't doing a chain build of the certificate that signed the SAML token. So we added that as well as a defense mechanism, because or else we were going to accept all the certificates. Given the slew of scenarios that customers have in terms of how they build their RPs, the best default we could come up with is to say, okay, we'll do a chain building against your store. So those are some crypto updates you're going to see as well, and we'll talk in detail about those things. And with that, I can ask Sid to give some updates on a few other features.
Sure. So we also added, as a part of this RC, significant changes to the WS Trust client. In beta, you would have realized that we had a class called WS Trust client. It gave you this great granularity and flexibility around all the tokens. What you see in RC is that we've actually changed the model a bit to now have a WS Trust channel factory. And I'll be going into more details on why we exactly did that. But that's one of the areas we made some significant changes for this RC. We also, you know, in lines with the whole WS channel factory, which can be used to do ACTAS, we also made some changes around how you think about ACTAS and how you think about ACTAS scenarios. One of the things we did is when you do ACTAS scenarios on your STS, you really want to think about the models for how you process your ACTAS token versus how you process your primary token a little differently. And previously in beta, we would just sort of cascade all your security requirements from your primary token down to your ACTAS token. And in RC, we have fundamentally changed that so that these security requirements aren't cascaded down by default. Instead, they are separate. And if you wanted a cascading down, you could choose to do that. But the reason why we didn't do that is to force you to think about these two security models as being a little different. And of course, the last thing we talked about again in the protocols area is that in beta, you know, you were stuck with this problem that, hey, let's say my relying party wanted to accept both SAML 1 and SAML 2 tokens. Previously in beta, your only option was to declare two endpoints. And, you know, some people didn't like that because it would lead to endpoint bloat. In RC, we've actually made it easier so that your RP, which is your relying party, can just declare one endpoint, and you can accept both SAML 1 and SAML 2 tokens all within that same endpoint, and you don't even have to think about SAML 1 or SAML 2. And so, you know, I personally feel that's a little bit of an optimization to help you, the developer, think about not having endpoint bloat. So, you know, these are some of the changes we have made for RC. And, you know, as you can see, Seisha and Govind, they're totally pumped about all these changes. We'll be doing a little more deep dive into going around some of the things we talked about. So I'll hand it over to Seisha.
Okay, so those are the major ones, and typically what we will do is we'll pick up three major topics, and we will go deeper into this. First one would be possibly let's talk about on the tracing and diagnosability, and then we will Sid will explain on the trust channel, and then Govind will explain mainly on the replay detection cache itself. Okay, let's go ahead and start using the whiteboard first, so we can go deeper. So for tracing, especially for example on the if you are a relying party application developer, there are scenarios specifically in the whole token validation pipeline how several of the tracing capabilities that we have added is going to be helpful for you. So let me show you on what the pipeline looks like and then what are the specific tracing capabilities that we have that will help you in diagnose the problems if in a specific spot in the pipeline you have specific issue. So let's say there is a, this is the WIF hosting layer. And so basically, typically when you get, this is especially on the relying party application pipeline. So because once I covered that, then the similar functionality, similar tracing capabilities are available on the STS pipeline as well. But I'll go for this session, I'll just cover only the relying party pipeline and how the tracing capabilities will help you. So an XML blob comes in, which is typically the post that is coming from the STS that has a token inside it, right? It's a post that happens. Imagine this is ASP.NET relying party. So I'm getting the token in my host body, and there are several aspects. The main thing is, on the token handlers. First one is the signature validation. And so when the XML block comes in, first thing is we want to know, is that block contains the necessary information? So we actually trace or actually log the whole block itself, so which is like the what we call WSFed tracing. So we have that capability. So that tracing functionality will allow you to figure out what is came in the XML body, in the token, in the post body itself. Then the signature validation, the first thing that happens within the token handlers, for this, what they'll typically use, we actually call into issuer token resolvers. And we basically just send a reference on this point for the token, and then we get back the security token from it. So, as I said, this is the number one tracing, which is the Fed passive tracing that's available to help you to figure out if there's any issues there. And number two, in this particular aspect of issuer token resolvers, when the security token comes back, there is a token tracing available. I'll start naming them here. So that will help you to figure out what actually came out of the issuer token resolver. And then within the token handler, the next major step that happens is the token validation slash the audience validation that happens. Now, during this phase, we basically call into, many of you are already aware, which is available in Beta 2, which is the issuer name registry extensibility point. So we would call into the issuer name registry to provide the app developer an opportunity to validate whether you indeed trust this particular issuer or not, and then return back what the issuer name that you would like to be used for that those the claims that are going to be available in this apps. Right? So what goes in here is the security token for the issuer name registry, and you get back the issuer name. Now further along, this is the issuer name that will be used for the claims that are going to be available for you in your app. Then the last thing is extracting the claims and setting the principle for the thread.cron principle. Okay, so now at this point, we basically send out the claims principle. This become available. And for that, we actually have a claims principle tracing. So at that point, you'll say, by logging in, what is inside the claims principle? You can see all the identities and what are the claims available within a specific identity, iClaims identity as well. So that tracing, claims principle tracing, will help you trace down if there are any issues on the identity that is getting returned back on the specific phase. And then the next step would be you have a claims authentication manager. So this is another extensibility point where you will get a claims principle in, and you can choose to modify this claims principle the way that you would like to. Right? You can change it to a custom principle and then return back a claims principle that the way that you would like to see it subsequently in your application's stack. Again, in the same layer, the claims principle tracing will help you will basically log all the information about what claims principle has been returned out of this claims authentication manager. So that's number three here, what's going to be helpful, two here. And then finally, the session security token. So once the claims principle comes in, you have finally the session security token is the one that's getting into the session token that's getting issued, and then the cookie is being issued back to the client. So we have a bunch of tracing around the cookies. For example, the chunk to cookie tracing. And then we also have deflate cookies as well. Tracing. So those will help you if there are any issues specific to the cookies that you are getting in your session, session authentication module, and go deeper into what was the issue specific to the cookie itself. Then that's the session token specific aspects. And then finally, on the claims authorization manager, I would like to call out So this is where the principal comes in, client principal, and with the client's authorization manager pipeline module, we can make a decision, authorization decision, whether to let the user in or not. So it's a Boolean decision at that point. So during that authorization decision phase as well, we have an authorize tracing statement. So you can look at what is the principal that came in and the decision that was made that will ultimately impact whether the user is getting access to the application or not. So the authorized trace will actually help you in figuring that out if there are any issues in that particular phase. So it's a Boolean result that's going back and forth. This will be returned back to the player. So as you can see, in the whole blind party pipeline, there are several traces that we have introduced, and it will help you and diagnose if there are specific issues on the specific leg itself. And it's, you know, it's very similar to the WCF tracing. You can actually enable this within your config. And you know, being able to look at granularly what are all the identity information that is within the blob or within the specific client's principle or within the token, and then diagnose the problem itself. So in a similar fashion, we have an STS pipeline, and we have several tracing available there as well. We have actually covered this much more in the product documentation on what are all the tracing available for STS pipeline as well. Okay. So with that, I'll ask Sid to talk a little bit more about Trust Channel, actually.
All right. So I won't erase this pretty diagram because, as you can see, the pipeline looks fairly complicated, and as Seisha has neatly laid it out, you know, there are several layers to this this pipeline. But you know, I'll be talking about what I had previously talked about, which is the trust client change that you saw in beta to what we call as Trust Channel Factory, and the reasons why we did that. In beta, if you recall, we had this class called WS Trust Client. And the primary motivation of using a WS Trust client versus just using a WCF client was you had you know, tighter or finer grained control over the token you got back from the STS. That, and in addition to, it enabled you to do scenarios where you could do act as. And maybe if I draw
Yeah, actually, feel free to reclaim the space.
Okay, great, awesome. So, sorry, Seisha.
It's the magic of recording. It's all in bits inside our little hard disk.
All right. So, just to give you a brief recap here, your act-as scenario is you have an IE client and, you know, your relying party and your STS.
Wow, that diagram looks familiar, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, I mean, this is what we've been living, breathing, and
the same diagram we do for the last 2 years.
Right, exactly.
So the last 4 years. The free
right.
body diagram.
So this is your classic Fed passive scenario where you go to the RP, you get balanced to the STS, and you come back with a token, and you get back a cookie. Now our act-as scenario is actually a variant of that, where your RP, which in this particular example is an ASP.NET RP, what it can do is it can turn around and say, you know, hey, I want to act as this particular user which got the token from this STS. And the reason it wants to do that is because eventually it wants to access this service sitting at some other location as this particular user. So the way we enable that in Federation is you have this concept of act as, where basically the RP does an RST with this guy's token shoved into the act as element, gets back the token, and then presents the token, which funnily enough has the same claims from the user's token in it, and presents that to the service, so the service can say, hey, you know, I got this token from this STS, so I know it's the RP sending the token. Also, within that token, I have the original user's claim, so I know who's accessing, or who this RP is trying to access me as. So this is a pretty complicated scenario, and one that's very difficult to do if you just use a WCF channel. So we introduced this WS Trust client, which was in beta. Now fast forward to RC, you have this WS Trust channel factory. And the reason why we did that is, if you think about this RP a little bit, it's really acting like a middle tier. And so, you know, users were forced to make a decision, okay, do I new up a new WS Trust client on every call to the STS? Or how should I think about, should I cache that WS Trust client and reuse that on every call to the RP? Because both solutions, frankly, perfectly work, but they all have their different challenges, pros and cons. And the main con with caching you know, the WS Trust client was that it, you know, you have several threads accessing the RP, all going to the same WS Trust client. You would see some perf degradation. Also, it didn't enable some scenarios where if this RP wanted to impersonate for any reason, it couldn't use that same channel to impersonate and then make a call to the STS. Because guess what? That channel is actually shared with a million other threads coming into the RP. So obviously the caching solution didn't work. Well, what about the other solution where, you know, the RP would new up AWS Trust client every time to the STS? Well, that surely works, except the problem was performance. Because what happens is, in beta, our WS Trust client, derived from what was, you know, the WCF concept called a client base. And what this did was, every time you new one up, it creates a new channel factory. And creating a new channel factory in WCF is very expensive. So, newing it up had also perf implications, where, you know, these calls would be slower. So, fast forward to RC, you have this WS Trust channel, factory, and the whole goal was for the RP developer to think about caching this channel factory, and then instead on every call you would just new up, you would create a new channel, so you know our call would really be WS Trust channel factory dot create channel, you'd get a WS Trust channel, and that would actually enable both scenarios where you wanted to impersonate, because hey, now you have a brand new channel you can impersonate with. It also avoided that performance problem we initially had, because now you're caching that heavyweight channel factory, and you're just spinning up new channels, and spinning up new channels was fairly cheap. So that was the main reason why we chose to go from WS Trust client to a WS Trust channel factory. And, you know, we did this based on some feedback we got from people on how to think about this. And again, this, you know, there's no right or wrong answer here. Whether you choose to, I mean, one could always choose to new up a new channel and cache that channel. Because they say, hey, you know what, I don't have this impersonation scenario. And I don't care about perf that much. And I just want a really fast access, because face it, caching a channel is much faster than newing up a channel on every request. So, you know, please look at your app, look at the characteristics of your particular app, and, you know, we've given you the flexibility to make some informed decisions here. We'll be publishing some guidance around this topic. It is a hairy topic, so, you know, that's the reason why we did what we did. So, having said that, and having talked for a little longer than I should have, I'll pass my the stage over to Govind, who will be talking a little bit about the replay cache.
So, hi, thanks, Doug. As you've seen, what Sesha and Sid talked about is we have done a lot of updates in terms of tracing, traceability, definitely something we want to give our developers. We have done a ton of work in terms of improving performance. What Sid talked about is just like one particular case. So the third pillar, which we worked really hard on, was basically we wanted to vet out all the security scenarios of the framework, right? So we sat down, we said, okay, this is what we are providing in the framework. Now let's draw data flow diagrams on this and see where how secure are this framework. So we came up with quite a few interesting scenarios where we had to improve the security model that we had from beta. And one of the things we did was actually the replay direction cache that we added. So my diagrams are not this complicated, so I'm going to take off these pieces from here. So let's go back to a simple passive Fed case, right? So I have an STS, a client, an IE browser, goes to an STS, tries to access an RP, gets redirected to an STS, gets a token, and you post the token to the RP. So when I say we are posting the token, so what's happening in this leg is basically the STS is posting back a JavaScript, right? And that actually a form which contains the SAML token inside it, and then a JavaScript basically posts it back to the RP. Now we said, okay, let me say this via IE being from access from your home machine or anything, let me say this is a kiosk, right? So I have a kiosk scenario. I accessed my application. I got redirected to an STS. I got the token required. I posted it back to the RP. And for some reason, I was in a hurry. Let me say my coffee got over. I got to go get another coffee or whatever. I left the browser running there. Now, even if I hit sign up, right? Let me say I hit sign up. The JavaScript which we posted on this IE window is still there. It still contains the SAML token inside that. So another user comes in, he just goes in and says, okay, here's the back button in the browser, let me hit the back button. He hits the back button, he accesses the page which contains the form with the SAML token, and he, bam, he posts that back to the RP now, and the RP is going to authenticate him. Now that was the case in beta. So to get around this issue, what we did was, okay, when I get back a SAML token, I'm going to have a cache here, which where I'm going to store this token for a certain period of time until the token expires, right? And if I see the same token coming back to me, like this is the token we were able to authenticate and we were able to issue a cookie to the client. So once that happens, that token goes into this cache. And after that point, if we see the same token getting back to us before the expiration of that cookie that we issued for that particular token, we actually deny that token. Now, the next question you might immediately have is, okay, it's great you have a cache, but can I go plug in my own custom cache? And the answer is absolutely yes. So you are going to have web form scenarios. You might want to replace the cache so that multiple machines can access that, and you can obviously do that. So that's a story with the replay direction cache that we added. Just going back to the first introduction, I mentioned that we were replacing our default hashing algorithm to SHA-256. As I told you, there is going to be interrupt issues because not every endpoint in the world has a data to SHA-256, but there aren't extensibilities in WIF which you can use to actually change it to SHA-1 if you choose to do so. So that's the story with replay direction cache, and let's turn back to Sesha for more updates on what WIF contains and also the thing with PDC.
Okay. So as you can see, there are a lot of classic features that we have added in the release candidate, and then based on the feedback that you have given in beta 2, we have taken to our heart and made modifications in the release candidate. And by this time, you will actually have access to the release candidate. And I would ask you to strongly encourage, go and try it out and give us more feedback. And then, last but not least, we actually will see you, see you in the PDC in the November in Los Angeles. So we have great sessions on WebIF. And I would encourage you to actually come and visit there, and I hope to see you there.
Yep, PDC.
All right, that's great. And in fact, since you mentioned PDC, I would like to remind the audience that you'll have the unique opportunity of actually talking to the team. Like last year, we are going to have a booth. And if you just walk by in the big room, you'll have a chance of getting the whiteboard treatment directly from the engineers and from yours truly, from behind the camera. And with that, I really thank you guys. This was awesome. And I'll see you again for RTM. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.